Wow, this is a popular session. When we were speaking with MPI about the power keynotes, we kind of had a feeling Warren Brown would be popular. He's a good-looking man, and he knows how to bake. I'm John Turan, Senior Vice President with Kepler Speakers, and welcome to the final Kepler Power Keynote of the MPI conference, of the MPI Meet Different conference. There are plenty of seats in the middle here toward the front for people that are still coming in. And before we introduce Warren Brown, founder of Cake Love, I want to tell everybody about a special giveaway we're going to be doing as part of this session. You may see behind me, I know it's a little bit before lunch, a Cake Love box of love. 10 lucky winners in the audience are going to win a box of love. Unfortunately, Warren couldn't bring treats for everybody here, but if you could, on your way out of the session, if you're interested in entering the drawing, drop a business card on the table in the back at that door by your left or by your right, and we'll be notifying the winners by email tomorrow. So we hope you win, and good luck. And now on to today's speaker. Warren Brown is a bakery extraordinaire and founder of Cake Love, a chain of bakery cafes in the Washington, D.C. area. He's also the host of Food Network's Sugar Rush and was named the Small Business Person of the Year in 2006. Warren's also the author of two books and has been featured on various media outlets ranging from The Oprah Winfrey Show to People Magazine. Here to tell us more about finding your passion and following your calling is Cake Love's Warren Brown.
Thank you, Jeff. Hello. Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for coming. This is wonderful. It's a very, very full room. And as people continue to come in, we're gonna have a nice hour to talk about Cake Love and cake and finding your passion and all the craziness that happens in between. My name is Warren Brown. I came in from Washington yesterday, where I live, and very glad to be here. Really glad to be here. It's always a pleasure to talk about this whole transition and the whole growth of my business that I've been going through, mostly because I like to share with people what I've been through, because when I was starting up, that was the best advice, that was the best vehicle way for me to learn and get the courage to make a break from practicing law to get into business. I was very scared when I made that leap. If you're not scared, I think you'd be unhinged and a little crazy. But then again, you're a little crazy if you do make such a leap, you know. Being in business is a lot of fun. It's challenging. In these times, it's extremely challenging. So I definitely want to talk about that a little bit. And just kind of, you know, tell you what I think about, I don't know, what people have said to me. You know, they ask me, why would you do it? How did you do it? You know, would you do it again? And I wouldn't trade it in, you know. And I've had the best experiences of my life so far in running this business. I met my wife at one of my shops. I just got married in October, and it was wonderful, yeah. It's great. Being married is wonderful. It's funny, like in Baltimore, where I have one of my shops, they have these billboards that says, marriage works. And we always used to laugh at it beforehand, but so far, you know, it's a wonderful thing. Yeah. I came to Washington, D.C. I moved there from Los Angeles in 1995, and I went to law school at George Washington University. I had an interest in studying health education, so I got a public health degree at the same time. The intersection of law, though, is that I really wanted credentials so I could stand in front of PTAs and school boards and help them understand that the materials that I use as a health educator to talk about, whether it was tobacco or reproductive health education, which was really my focus, that those materials, they didn't answer any of the questions that the students really had. You know, I mean, I would wrap up my week with anonymous questions from the students, and every single thing that was on there, basically the books didn't cover. The students could answer the questions of their peers, but the books didn't address it at all. And I thought that wasn't right. You know, I thought maybe we should kind of bring everything up to speed a little bit. And in going to law school, it was really good because it unlocked a lot of things in me that I knew were there, but I guess I suppressed in that quest of going the corporate route, you could say. I graduated from Brown University. I studied history. I didn't really know what I wanted to make myself as a career, but in studying law, it seemed like it would be a little safe, and then maybe I could bridge everything with health education. In law school, I had a lot of time that I probably should have been studying, but I was cooking. I was cooking for my housemates, and I was cooking for roommates and law school mates, everybody I knew, basically. Come on over for dinner. You know, I would make stuffed turkey. I would make baked chicken. We would grill out. Lots of different things. And what I was always looking for was a way to satisfy a passion of mine, and it's about food. You know, working with food, working in the kitchen, chopping, slicing, sautéing, roasting, all kinds of things. I mean, I love the definitions of different cooking techniques. I love just the method and the feel of the knife against the cutting board. I really get into that. I always do. And, when you can have that time in the kitchen, if you like cooking, when you have that time in the kitchen and you're preparing a meal, it's like nothing else, you know? You have this expectation that people to come over. Not only are you going to feed them and you're going to spend time with them, you're going to give them something that you're really putting your heart and soul into. It's a great sensation. And on top of that, I could eat it, so I was really happy. I've cooked my whole life. I've always enjoyed, I've always enjoyed doing it. And when I started, when I was like a teenager, basically, my mom said, hey, listen, if you're still hungry after eating dinner, then you can make something else, you know. You can help satisfy your own hunger. So, in law school, I cooked a lot, and I really got good at it, and I had a lot of fun with it. But I could never bake, you know. A lot of people say, oh, I can cook, but I can't bake. I like cooking, and it's fun because I can, you know, just throw anything in a pan and it'll basically work. But baking, it's too much. It's science. I got to measure things. I have to be exact and precise and follow the recipe, you know. And that was me. I was convinced I couldn't make anything out of flour. Just thought it was just a big pile of dust, you know. But I said, okay, hey, listen. Eventually, you're going to have to deal with this inability to bake. You know, you got to get over this fear of flour and move into something. Seriously, I really was. I was afraid of it. I hate the way when flour gets wet on the counter, it kind of just sticks there and it's all messy. Can't stand that. So I stayed away from baking as much as possible. Got out of law school, took the New York bar, passed that, thank God. Most difficult thing I've ever done in my life, really. And practiced law for 2 years with the federal government, Health and Human Services. It's a really good job. It's noble work. I was on the right side of the law, I think. We were prosecuting hospitals that would kick people out of the emergency room before they were stabilized. So basically patient dumping. We were going after those hospitals to impose fines against them. So it was really good work. But just not satisfying, you know. I felt like I had talents that weren't being utilized in my work. Everything I made was either a verbal presentation or something two-dimensional, just words on paper. Nothing was three-dimensional. Nothing you could smell. Nothing with color. Nothing that really just kind of got people's senses going, you know? And I knew that I had that in me to offer that to the world. I wanted to. So I began looking around, just in my life, for things that I could do or things that I would do that would please me but also be able to share what's in me with the world. I tried golfing. I read lots of fiction books. I saw every single movie that was playing, like the second run theater. I tried lots of different things to distract myself or to find what's in me. But not until a New Year's resolution 10 years ago, actually, in 1999, January 99, did I really kind of hit on it. And it was in two parts. One was just to learn how to bake. Okay, so you're a foodie. If you're really a foodie, then you're going to get over this whole fear of flour thing. And the second thing was a little more, I don't know, intense. It's much more personal. And it's really where I began to understand how to mine within my own self what I needed to go forward. And that was a little mantra I developed, somewhat based off of yoga and somewhat just off of, I guess, things I heard. But it was direct yourself to greatness, answer your calls, and answer to yourself. And when I stumbled on that, I kind of found a real, I found power. I found a way to actually do it. I found something that I could listen to that told me and introduced me back to myself. You know, I kind of liken it to that time in your life, you know, you go, if you can remember and go back to that time before you ever got phone calls, ever, you know, I mean, for me, that's like before fourth grade or something like that. And like when I could remember a little bit about the kid that I was and how I played or how I would do my work and play sports and stuff, what I looked for and what I felt when I would, you know, work with whatever I was doing, I like that, and I like that sensation. It gave me an anchor, really. So directing myself to greatness was one of those things where I said, hey, how can I get there? How can I do that? And I began to look for that kind of message or that signal. And learning how to bake really presented itself almost right away. I started bringing cakes into work because I would bake them at home. I had nothing really to, no one to share them with, really. I was living in a solo apartment. And people really started liking them and giving me good feedback. I wasn't a very good baker at first, I'll tell you that. very first cake I made was it was a real disaster. I mean, there were so many things wrong with it, like too much flour, poorly measured. I even made the batter, chilled some of it in the fridge, baked some of it because I had to go meet someone like on a date, and I was kind of in between things. You know, after the day, we came back to my place and we tried to make this frosting and then bring the cake over to this dinner party. The frosting was a disaster. And then together, it just didn't work at all. So there's value in following the recipe if you're not sure about what you're doing. but once I began to get into it a little bit and found better recipes, I saw the reaction in my friends' faces when they would bite into a cake, you know. This friend of mine from London one time, he bites into this cake, it's got lemon curd in it, and he's just like, oh my God, did you make this? You know? And it stayed with me in terms of just giving me motivation to keep on going and to really follow this whole cake thing to see where it would go. In learning how to bake, I tried pies, and tarts, and cookies, but I found that cakes was something that was exciting and satisfying for me. I like the work and the methodical work of, you know, layering it, assembling it, even decorating it. I liked all that intense work. And so one day in the summer, this is like August of 99, just, you know, 8 months into it, I go on a family reunion trip. And I'm bringing this cake with me from D.C. onto a plane. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, the thing is, I didn't have a box, or I didn't have like a cake carrier or anything like that. So I just took this chocolate cake, put it on a dinner plate, covered it with saran wrap, and back then they had like a blue saran wrap and burgundy saran wrap and yellow, so I used the blue stuff. And I'm carrying this blue plastic saran wrap plate with a chocolate cake on it through National Airport, onto the plane, get off the plane, walk it through JFK. The whole time, people are saying like, oh my God, did you bake that? You got to give me some of that. It's my birthday. You know, let me have some. It's like, oh, is that chocolate? I got to get some of that. You know? And people just were reacting and responding. I'm just like, what's the big deal here? You know? I walked through airports before. I've never gotten anyone to say anything to me. So, you know, here I am. And I'm waiting to get picked up. I put the cake on a bollard and I just kind of sit down. I'm spacing out. It's like Sunday at 10:30 in the morning. I'd been out the night before, you know. And it dawns on me. I'm like, if I just keep making that thing that's right there in front of me, I'll keep getting all these people coming to me. Like, it's the cake that draws people in. Just keep making the cake. And that was really it, you know? I mean, that was the epiphany moment. That was the light shining down from the sky. And I realized if I can keep doing this, maybe I can build a whole thing around it. The business, you know, do what I want, direct myself to the greatness that I was looking for, you know? And, you know, in getting there, okay, like how am I going to transition from practicing law to doing something where cakes are involved integrally, you know? So I got to, like, answer to myself. I had to find some way to have the faith and confidence that what I think is the right move to do is going to be the move I'm going to do, and I'm going to make it the right move. That's the one thing I think is difficult about being in business and being an entrepreneur is that you always want to make the right moves, but you have no idea what the right move is until you've made it, you know? And even if it's kind of wrong at first, you still have to make that the right move. You got to be flexible. You have to understand that, you know, the painting's not dry, the story's not over, it's never over. And that's tough, you know? That's tough if you need things in a concrete fashion, it's got to be black or white. It's never like that. It's always in between. And for me, I'm okay with that. I mean, I like riding outside the lines. I like knowing what the rules are and then realizing where the wiggle room is and exploiting that. You know, that's what they teach you in law school. They really do. And so, like, you know, practicing law really was very good, I think, in terms of preparation for being a business owner and being in business. I mean, you got to have rules and you got to know what to do, but the world is made up of interstices and ambiguities, and that's where you go. You know, you find this opportunity and you jump in. For me, in D.C., there was no one making cakes from scratch, layered, and like in a European style. There was no one making cupcakes. This is back in 2000 or so. And, you know, the world was kind of wide open. So I said, hey, let me see if I can go this route and do it. I got a leave of absence from my job. My bosses were very kind and, you know, gave me this room to experiment with the idea. I had 3 months that I could see if I can build the business. And they said, hey, listen, if it doesn't work, you can always come back. We don't know what job you'll have, but you can have a job here. So I said, okay, I'll take it. I'll go with it. I had 3 months. That was the plan. A couple weeks into it, I said, well, I know I'm going to need a little more time. How about a little bit more? So it was like 4 months. Let me tell you, it took like 18 months before I opened my first shop. Okay, opening up a startup business and starting up any business is difficult. It takes a lot of time. And I had to figure out what I had to do, you know. But again, kind of going back to like knowing which moves to make, you don't know what moves to make, you know. What comes first when you're looking to open a cake shop? Do you get the lease first? Do you get the financing first? Do you file for like your business license and stuff first? Can you file for your business license before you have a physical space? Yeah, it's a crazy, crazy, crazy game to figure out. And, you know, each storefront, to me, what I've realized, because there are 7 storefronts now in my Cake Love family, like, each one is a little different. You know, they're all a little different. But beginning it all and beginning it really by myself or with some people, but, you know, volunteer here, a volunteer there, it was challenging, you know. So the time that I took to kind of direct everything was more than I anticipated, but I'm still glad that I did it. Answering your calls and kind of answering to yourself, to me, is something that is a constant practice. You know, it's something that I always have to work on and refine, because right now, I mean, with running the business, there's 67 people that work for me and with me. There's lots of vendors that we have. There's lots of news to try to digest and figure out and put it into the business. There's a lot of noise, but I still have to try to realize what the core product and value is that K-Club delivers to people. I have to try to understand why people come to K-Club and focus on that, but not be too limited in, you know, what we offer. Lots of balancing, I'd say. It's been fun. It's really good. And those are, you know, that's kind of how I started. Direct yourself to greatness, answer your calls, and answer to yourself. Starting back in 2000, I opened the first shop in 2002. Now there are 7 K-Clubs around the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. And it's exciting. In between then, lots of opportunities have come up. I was host of the Sugar Rush on Food Network. It's a show that focused on desserts and how they're made. I would go around the different restaurants and bakeries and hotels, and we would showcase a nice piece that one of the pastry chefs would make. That was a ton of fun, a lot of travel, a lot of time away from my business, but still lots of fun and lots of exposure. In doing that, and also in writing my first cookbook, Cake Love, How to Bake Cakes from Scratch, what I really am interested in is sharing, you know, again, my experience and what I've learned. In those particular cases, it was great to share the technical aspects of what I've learned. How to bake a cake, how to improve cake making. One of the things I always found as I was doing all this recipe testing and developing over the years is that I think that there are things that people do wrong in learning how to bake that they do over and over again, that no one goes the other way and says, hey, listen, let's just stop this. Madness. You know? I mean, one thing, for example, how many bakers in the room, by the way? Okay, cool. How many people, when you're measuring, like, for your flour, you use a scale? Right, okay. If there's one thing I would suggest, if you want to improve your baking, whether you're a baker or you got a friend that's a baker, etc., go buy a scale. Go buy a scale, put a bowl on it, and when you want to measure your flour, take your sifter and sift right into the bowl set on the scale. Go for ounce measurements, or metric if you do that kind of thing. Go for your ounce measurements when you're weighing your flour. When you're scooping and leveling, you know, taking a cup measure and going into the flour bin or bag, you're going to compress more flour in that measure than you actually need. And I think it's like 20 to 30% more than you need. If you have that much more flour than the recipe calls for, catastrophic disaster. You can't recover. It's going to taste starchy. It's going to taste bland. It's going to taste heavy. It's going to be tight, you know. That's if you're following the recipe, okay? And the thing is, a lot of recipes, in my opinion, call for too much flour. They just do. I don't know why, but they call for a lot of flour. It could be the type of flour that's called for, like cake flour. Doesn't have a lot of gluten. Gluten is the skeletal matrix that gives you, like, structure in a cake. It's the proteins. And without enough of that, the cake will be kind of weak and soft. You cut it, and it kind of it falls apart like a sandcastle to me. A lot of recipes will call for more flour to kind of bulk it up, and that just tastes starchy. Or if they use all-purpose flour, they may call for thinning that out or adding some cornstarch into that. At my bakery, we use potato starch instead of cornstarch, just because the potato starch is a softer, more delicate starch than cornstarch. But the bottom line is, if you really want to do one thing to improve your baking and just change the performance that you're getting, regardless if you're very successful or not, scale. 25, 30 bucks from any of the kitchen supply stores. So sharing the knowledge that I've learned from running the bakery for 10 years and training lots and lots and lots of bakers over time, and seeing the common mistakes that people make, whether they're professionally trained or just totally amateurs, seeing the same mistakes all the time. That's one of the things I like to and want to help people to get beyond so that they can have their own small business or just make a better cake for the party. You know, either one of them, I think, is a worthwhile effort. And that's satisfying to me, and it gives me the pleasure of working out and developing my own talent so that I can share with other people and they can increase and improve their own talents through their performance. Let's take a minute and talk about like how you translate and how you deal with your passion when you're running a business, you know, and you got to deal with difficult times, recession. Recession for us starts showing its face in like June, okay? And I've got a store in Baltimore, and I have 6 in D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. And they're different economies, definitely. And when we had $4 gas, sales in Baltimore began to tick down, okay? And then in September, after Lehman Brothers and AIG and all that stuff, everything just totally dropped. I mean, we're talking instantly 30%. And it continued to drop. October, November, December, January, you know. The good thing, the silver lining is that, well, I don't know silver lining, but sales seem to be a little bit better in the last couple of weeks, which is great. We'll take it. But it's not like my business is out of the woods. And I seriously worry about other retail businesses, too, because I don't think anybody's out of the woods. I say this as much as I can to other people just because I hope that people can look out for this and that my concern is that commercial real estate will be looking for a bailout within the next couple of months because all the small businesses that are tenants in the malls, in the strip malls, and all those places where you see a small business or big businesses like Anchors, you know, Linens and Things is gone, that those tenants can't pay rent. And if enough of them can't pay rent, then these big landlords, commercial real estate, will miss their financing for what are the last quarter of 08 or the first two quarters of this year. That's my big concern. And I don't hear anybody talking about that. And I just kind of hope that that somehow makes its way into the media. In running a business right now, it's hard, but my staff are very understanding. They work with me. They're very accepting of the challenges that we have, the extra work that we have to do. You know, we're consolidating all of our inventory. We bake on site at Cake Love. So I got 7 locations, 7 kitchens. You know, workers' comp insurance is crazy because of that, and, you know, there's a lot of labor because of that. But doing the commissary model of, you know, baking in one place and shipping it out, everything's all finished, it's not exciting. Nobody likes that as a customer. That means you're gonna have like a quality product that, to me, is a little substandard. It's not as good as it could be if it's baked on site, right to the customer's preferences. It's baked that day. You know, it's better if we bake it on site. Additionally, we're able to train people and give more people skills. To me, that's the idea. You know, I'm more interested in making sure that. You know, someone like one of my bakers in Silver Spring, Jasmine, she's been with me for 5 years. She's got 3 kids and a husband. She's the breadwinner for the family, you know? And I'd rather have her employed than, like, just have 1 or 2 people at some big shop making, you know, cakes and a mixer that could fit all of our mixers combined into it, you know, in all 7 shops. So my staff works with me, and they understand, and it's still challenging, it's still difficult, because at the end of the day, everyone's got bills to pay. But what I think is really important as a business owner, and anyone that's going to be an entrepreneur, really anybody, is that we all have to be really informed about what's going on in the world. I'm a total news junkie, and it helps, because I had to make a lot of unfortunate and tough decisions in November, really like in October, to look at the schedule and make changes in the schedule, to call my vendors and say to them, hey, listen, it's looking very bad. We need to talk, see what we can come up with. And everything got changed in my business, from my insurance to some of the leases, calling the phone company, consolidating all the inventory. Like, everything changed. And, it's what's necessary. So I think it's, you got to keep in mind, if you're ever considering making a jump and change in your career path, and for anyone else that you know, the hard times come with all the fun and exciting glitz of following your passion, and the hard times of saying no to people, saying no to someone and letting them down. I mean, that's one thing that I realized, that it happens in the course of life, but also in the course of running a business. You're going to let somebody down. But the whole idea is to make sure that there's more people that are happy than are not. And I guess it takes a little bit of a thick skin in a person that runs a business to make sure that that's okay, that that's a sacrifice that you're willing to make for the business and for the people that work with you. And I have. I mean, I've reconciled that, and it's okay with me, and I go forward and do it. And I'm going to keep going with it, you know. In terms of, like, where are we going? What's K-Club about? Where are we headed in the future? We added 4 shops in the last year. That's a little difficult to manage right now, definitely. But the goal right now, I think, for any business right now is to survive. And if there's any money that's made out of it all, put it right into savings or to share with the organization. After that, once things settle down, sure, I want to keep on growing. I think people like cake, you know. I know people like cake, and I know that there's always going to be demand for cake. And making sure that our price point is something that people are okay with, and that they see and understand the broad, the very wide, the many, many events that they can have cake at. You know? Because the key thing is that if you show up in a room with a cake, everyone's going to be happy, you know? So whether you're planning a meeting or coming home to your family, show up with a cake and you're the most popular person in the room. we'll continue to grow. We just got to make sure that we manage things as is necessary over the next year. If this whole recession is a year, continuing from now, which I hope that it's shorter, but it's really, really, it's amazing, I think, what's going on. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible to me what kind of environment that we're all in. But we're in this all together, you know? And that is, it's comforting to some degree. I mean, it really is. It's comforting to know that everyone is focused on this. And I think that, I know that we will get through it. It's just a matter of time. So Cake Love is a good experience and a good experiment for how to find a passion and how to grow it. And I always say to people, you know, a business is a very organic thing, you know. You start it, you cultivate it, you can see it coming out of the earth and coming into focus in other people's eyes. They begin to understand it after lots of confusion. You have to repeatedly express to people what you're looking to do and why you're doing it. And soon, sometimes sooner than you think, the whole growth begins to take on a shape that is something that you're happy about, but it might be a little different than you expected. And you have to go with that. And hopefully it won't be too much, and it won't, you know, roll around too fast in front of you and over you. But the challenge is just understanding what it is that you've cultivated and enjoying that whole process. I think that the whole notion of enjoying the process rather than enjoying arriving at the destination is one of the most important things an entrepreneur can bring to the table. There'll be some time for questions, but thank you very much for your attention, and I am glad to be here. There's microphones on the sides if anybody has any questions, or if you're kind of stuck in the middle, I'll just be happy to repeat a question if somebody has one. Sure, sir.
Are you planning on franchising in the future?
Question is, am I planning on franchising? Not at the moment. I mean, I've definitely thought about it and talked to other people about it. I probably will look to that model because, you know, it's tiring just growing a business having 7 shops. We've got all the different, you know, like material that we would need to instruct someone how to do it. But the legal aspect of the franchising is not something I haven't really gone to look into that yet. But probably in the future. Sure. Biggest business mistake and what have I learned? You know, I'd love to say that opening up shops is it, you know, and knowing which location to open them up in. That's the key thing. There's a couple of shops I have that are just underperforming, and they're not meeting their expectation, and chances are they never will. So I wish that I had either the patience or the foresight to have known that. Patience to not sign, or foresight to not have known, but it's difficult, you know. I mean, the first place I opened up a shop was in a very transitional neighborhood. Everyone and their brother said I was crazy to open up a cake shop, you know, on that block. There was blight right across the street. There was really nothing going on there. It wasn't a popular destination, yet it totally worked. So I, you know, took a gamble, and if I could do that over again, I probably would change 2 of the locations I'd change. Sure.
Do you make any cakes that are for folks that have celiac or allergic reactions? And I'll say with that, my husband is a diabetic who has celiac, loves to eat cake. Trying to make a cake in that experience is a nightmare.
Yeah, that's a very small window there. The question is, do we make gluten-free products and or anything with reduced sugar or all-natural sugar or sugar-free? And we don't do the latter. We don't do sugar-free items. We tried that at Cake Love, things with agave syrup and all-natural sweetener, lower glycemic index, so it doesn't spike your blood sugar. But people weren't into it. They just didn't embrace that. Gluten-free, we do bake. Our bakery is not gluten-free because there's flour in there, but we bake gluten-free stuff at the beginning of the day and then like put it away. Gluten is proteins that's in wheat flour, also like in oats, but mostly in wheat flour. And people with celiac disease are not able to digest it, and it causes a lot of problems with their intestinal tract. It's been an important addition to the product line. It was one of those things we introduced, I don't know, I think it was May of 06 or so, and it really wasn't embraced. It was a little bit before it was out there in the press that people really understood it. What's the unfortunate thing is a lot of people with celiac disease have it and don't know it. And they go to the physician, the doctor, to try and get diagnosed and helped, and everyone struggles for, you know, like 2 years trying to figure out what's going on. No one knows because Western medicine doesn't really seem to recognize, you know, that as one of the main things, or at least didn't a couple of years ago. I think like 1 in 20 people have celiac disease. It's a large number. So a lot of people that have gastric disturbances, this could be one of the things that's behind it. So we do bake celiac, but it didn't get embraced in the beginning, so we took it off the menu. About as soon as we did, we had to bring it back. Sure, right in front.
What do you bake besides cakes?
Cupcakes, which is a little cake. brownies, cookies, eclairs, scones, some muffins. It's mostly cake. The other things we make, we bake basically because we had time and we needed to kind of round out the store shelves a little bit. But we don't do breads. There's no yeast-risen dough. And it's mostly a carry-out like setting. I mean, there are some tables and chairs, but it's not a cafe per se. It's a bakery like you go to when you're a little kid, and maybe they had a table over there, but you know, it's old school. And what we do is, I mean, we're all butter, we're all natural. There's no artificial dyes. It's stuff that makes you want to get and buy a layer of cake that is going to taste good. I'm a fanatic about how things taste. I care about how they look. I mean, I want them to look elegant, but I don't really care, you know? I just want it to taste good and taste like, you know, something you haven't had in a very long time. In reaching that goal, it's very important that it not be too sweet. Cakes that's too sweet, they have no appeal. They don't appeal to adults, okay? Because our palate is not something that needs a lot of sugar. Little kids love sugar, but adults, you know, it makes your throat go like this. You can't talk. You know, like when you eat something that's too sweet, just sucks all the liquid out of your voice box. So we stay away from that. We do that by doing mostly European methods of production for the buttercream. So cooked buttercreams with egg whites that are cooked with a hot sugar syrup, and then you put in butter, or like a pastry cream-based buttercream. Basically, it is not butter plus confectioner's sugar whipped until it's smooth and added a little bit of milk. It is not that. Okay? Because that's really, really sweet. That's like the one on the side of the Domino sugar box and stuff.
I've got a question over here, right here at the mic.
I'm sorry. The mic will come to you second.
First of all, comment that your whole philosophy is very much like Ron Henderson, who opened Pulp. Similar neighborhood, my favorite places. And so I know that two questions. One is, you talked a second ago about the franchise idea. Uh-huh. I'd love for you to talk a little bit, for those of us with our own businesses, about succession planning. And the second is, we're coming up to the cafe on Sunday before we go to the Lincoln. So my question is, the cafe is part of this but separate. So talk about that piece of it as well.
Sure. Okay. And you're from Washington,
yeah.
I guess. Yeah. Okay.
You know, where we have taxation without representation.
That's right. That's right. Yep. We need representation in D.C. My second book is going to be United Cakes of America. And I like to say it's going to be 52 cakes for 52 states, which I'd like to see, you know, D.C. and at least Puerto Rico become a state. Yeah. Representation. I mean, you know, that's what the whole revolution was about. Succession planning. That's something I have to work on. I mean, I'm guessing you're meaning, like, in the event of my unfortunate demise, what happens to the business? Yeah. right now, my wife might be the lucky inheritor of all the madness. We've got a very good organization at Cake Love. It's basically split into front of the house and back of the house, general manager and head baker per shop. I've got a couple of people that help me at a corporate level that run around and do everything. But it needs some structure, and every small business definitely needs structure and a succession plan. But every business does. I mean, Apple's suffering from the same fate with Steve Jobs right now. I mean, hopefully, you know, heaven forbid that he passes, but, you know, they're themselves are looking at what's going to happen. So everybody that's in business needs to make sure that they're prepared for the inevitable. And, you know, in life, I think everyone needs to. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I am so passionate about following your passion is that, being introduced to death is something that happened to me when I was in eighth grade. My next-door neighbor, Luke Manfredi, who was a couple years older than me, had moved to Las Vegas, and he died in 1985 when I was in eighth grade. He had had rheumatic fever when he was scarlet fever when he was a kid, and his heart was permanently damaged after that. His father told me that he would have been a candidate for a heart transplant had it been available back then, but it's not. It wasn't, et cetera. When he died, I was devastated. And, you know, I didn't know what end was up. I was very, very sad, depressed, scared. And, you know, I mean, thought about death, I'm sure, as much as other kids do at that age, you know, when you're a teenager and stuff. But I thought about it a little bit more. kind of make matters worse on my own self is that I used to make models of little military miniatures when I was a kid, tanks and soldiers and things like that, play with them, tanks and army and stuff. And kind of had that little boy glorifying of war thing. And then when I realized what that meant when I lost my friend, I was crushed. I was just crushed. And I guess really what had happened is that I made a commitment for myself that I would try to make sure that I lived my life as strongly as I could and as hard as I could, because people that I know weren't able to live for as many years as I have had. And so I've wanted to make all the years count and all the days count. And that means every effort to count. And so, succession planning is something that we can't get away from. And I've got to get on that. I guess I've just been avoiding it. She did have one other question that I'll speak to was, I've got six Cake Love bakeries and there's one Love Cafe. And the cafe sits right across the street from the first bakery, just directly north of it. And we sell sandwiches and salads, but mostly slices of cake and coffee because of the first bakery. Like I was saying, it's all carry out. And at that cafe, you can get all those different things. I'm not sure if I answered the question, but I think... The decision for the cafe was really inspired by the customers and the presence on U Street in that community. The first location was on U Street in D.C. And people were looking for a place where they could chill out, hang out, and have cake, because they were insisting that they wanted that cafe experience that I was saying that I really don't do. I think that it's easier to run a bakery than a cafe. I think that it's more profitable to run a bakery than a cafe. And my mind just wraps around the bakery issues a lot faster and a lot easier than around the cafe stuff, because I'm not a coffee drinker. As an entrepreneur, like, I'm kind of always on the go. I'm not the kind of guy who'd just be sitting in the cafe, just kind of hanging out. So I'm much more like, let's go, let's get it done. And we can close early at the cafe or at the bakery. Like, we're basically done by 6 or 7 in most locations, and I'm an early riser kind of guy. So the whole thing is more, I'm more a bakery than cafe. And a lot of people ask, well, will you do more cafes? And the answer is no. Sir, right here. Yes. First question is, do we do mail order? And the answer is yes, we do. You can go to cakelove.com and get lots of things, get things sent in the mail. Not everything. I mean, some things are only pickup, like the layer cakes with frosting, but we do the boxes of love, a couple different versions of them. We do pound cakes by mail, and we'll be adding more of those for mail order. So yes, we do that. You can visit cakelove.com, our website, or you can just Google for Warren Brown and Cakes, and it should pop up. Second thing was the hairstyle. When I first grew out locks, I just wanted to be able to do this. Seriously. And then I graduated from law school, and I cut them all off when I started as a lawyer. And the first day of work, my boss, he didn't say this to me, he's just like, why'd you cut your hair? Like, you didn't need to do that, you know? He's like, that's one of the reasons why we hired you. He's like, you're different. it was okay, and I grew them back basically as fast as I could. It's just kind of stuck now. So I have thought about cutting them off again, but that hasn't happened yet, so... I'm not sure if I will. At the mic?
Yes. I wasn't in here earlier, so I'm just curious about how you made that transition. I mean, you went through law school, and obviously you passed the bar, which I understand is not a simple thing to do.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I know, I hear you talk about you're baking cakes, and let them eat cake.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, so internally, was that all, was your passion always to become a baker, or did you just...
My passion has just really been about food. I mean, I like to say to people, like, it could be marinara sauce or rice or anything. I mean, I like food and everything that it kind of does for you. I have cooked since I was a kid, but I didn't know how to bake. And so I made a New Year's resolution in 99 to get into baking. And sooner than later, it came clear to me that cakes were something that people were really excited about. And I wanted to try and see how I could basically bridge cakes and my inner passions for just being in the kitchen. And Cake Club was born.
So why not culinary schooling?
I didn't go to culinary school. I studied at home and read every book I could and stuff like that on the science of food and stuff. And I didn't want to go to culinary school because I didn't want to go to grad school again because I had had enough. Right here in front?
I have a question showing up on television. And I just keep having to watch it. Does your passion still yearn at you as it did the first time you realized that this is what I need? Is it still burning you? Is it coming in?
Yeah. No, I hear you. The question is my passion really still there? I think for baking and for cakes, as well as just for the business. And it is. It is. I mean, it's not extinguished. Sometimes it dims a little bit, you know, like passion on a dimmer. that's a good way to think of it, I guess. Sometimes it does a little bit, but that's when you need to go away or take a break or go out and just step away from it. In researching the second book on the 52 cakes, that's exciting. It's different. I'm in the kitchen more, you know, baking and doing new stuff than I have been in a while. And while it's a little bit of an effort to get there, once I'm there, I realize how much I like it and how much I miss it, frankly. I mean, I don't really miss scoop and batter for cupcakes, you know, day in, day out, but I do miss the hum of the bakery and the satisfaction of making something you can point to. I'm telling you, if you guys don't have that in your life about making something that's three-dimensional, find a way that you can put that into your life or get that in your life, because it brings out something inside of every human. I think it's just it's a human thing that it gives you pride, it gives you joy, it gives you something you can share with other people and they kind of marvel at you. And then you're like, oh, cool. You know, I mean, it's a nice thing to be able to do. And as much as I can, I like to get in the bakery and do that. It's even better when you can share it and they can eat it. Yeah.
What's your favorite cake?
My favorite cake. It depends on the day. It really does. Right now, it's the pecan buttercream. It's a pastry cream-based buttercream. We're taking milk, we put pecans in it, we bring it to simmer, we strain the nuts out and toast them. We take that milk that's got the flavors in the oils of the nuts, right? So the milk's got all this flavor in it. We bring that into yolks and starch, then bring that back onto the pot. We cook it to a certain point, then we put it into the mixer, we whip it, we put in butter, then we put it on top of the cake. And those pecans that have been toasted and cooled, they go into that buttercream. Dude, awesome! It's awesome. Yeah, it's good. Right here again.
To know where you got the company from.
I didn't bake my own cakes, but we had like seven of them from the bakers, one from each shop. And yeah, it was nice. And the Cake Love, you know, the URL for Love Cake was taken, so I just flipped it and looked, and it was available. Cake Love was born. The thing is that when I first, you know, this is 99 or so when I first reserved it. And back then, I didn't have a business card, didn't have anything like that. And people were just grabbing URLs and whatnot. And I'd say Cake Love to people and they're like, that sounds kind of risque or something. They really didn't know what it was about. So not until the storefront was there and the sign actually was there was the name Cake Love, I guess, unveiled to the world. And I'd say there's one thing I learned that I didn't know. The power of a good sign for a business, which is frustrating because, one, they're expensive. But two, it's like, for me, you know, as a guy who kind of doesn't really care so much about how things look, it's more about the content of your character, you know? I'm like, who cares what the sign looks like, you know? It doesn't really matter that much. But I learned from all the people that came in, because they saw this interesting looking sign that was metal and rusted, and the letters Cake Love were cut out, so it's the negative space, and then there's blue light behind it. So at night, you could totally see it. During the day, people thought we were called Cakes from Scratch, because that was like, I don't know if you can see it there, but it just showed up easier on the metal. But at night, it was very clear what we were, and people really liked that sign. Mm-hmm. Where I was, what to keep up, struggling? Totally, yeah. I was, I guess it's like, you know, I left in October. I left right at the election of 2000. And I didn't open up my bakery until March of 2002. And right before I opened up, about 4 months, 5 months into it, I really didn't know what I was going to do. Because I was running out of money. I had some cafes that were interested, and they were carrying my product, but not as many that I started with. Like, some just kind of dropped off. Everyone loves the new thing. Whatever you're going to bring in, it's new. People love it. It's great. 4 weeks into it, they're like, don't really need any more. Can't afford it. Too expensive. Do you have anything else? You know, they wanted other stuff. And I didn't have anything else to offer. And I was running out of money. I remember, I think this is accurate, but I always remember that I had $187 left in my bank account. Not much. And there was an article that came out about me in the Washington Post, in the food section of the Post. And that story was being written over the course of several months, and this is a total luck thing. And this is like listening to yourself, right? Backtrack. Two or three days into my leave of absence from my job, I go down to this kitchen supply shop in Old Town Alexandria, and I had brought them a cake a week beforehand that I wasn't really sure how it worked out. I thought it was a little too warm in the car before I delivered it, and sure enough, the cake kind of melted, right? But before I went to that shop, I was in the parking lot of Trader Joe's, and I had my wheels turned this way to go back to D.C., but I said, let me go over to La Cuisine. So something's telling me to go over there. So I turn my wheels the other way. I drive in front of La Cuisine. There's a parking spot right there. I'm like, okay, I got to go in now. And so I park, and I go in. I'm talking to them. And they say, like, you know, it melted. And it was good, but it was just a little too soft. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm sorry. She's like, well, you got to use, you know, a little bit of Crisco. You got to put that in there for fudge room. You know, it's going to happen. I know, right. I'm just like, oh. You can't do that, you know. Crisco tastes like, you know, wax. And so we get into this, you know, a lot of banter about the buttercream and how to make it, best way to make it, all this kind of stuff, you know, technical stuff. This woman's right next to me. She says, what kind of cakes do you make? I look in her basket, I look at her, and I'm like thinking to myself, she's got a turkey thermometer and a turkey baster and another turkey baster and a vertical roaster for a turkey and another thing for a turkey. She's got like, you can make like 7 turkeys. You know, I'm like, oh my God, like, I make some pound cakes and some fruit cakes and something else. Like, I just kind of gave her the quick answer. She's like, well, if you ever want to bring me some recipes, here's my card. And it said, Judith Weinrob, Washington Post food writer. Totally. I'm like, I've got a story for you, you know? So I'm like, I'm this lawyer, and I make cakes, and I want to do this, that, and the other. She's like, okay, honey, just, you know, bring me samples, and we'll see what goes on, you know. So I call her, and I bring in samples of like 5 whole cakes the next week or so. And turns out they liked them. She followed me for like 3 months, and we developed a very nice relationship. She's a very sweet woman, love her to death. And she wrote this article that was like, will Warren Brown leave law to bake cakes, you know? And it just chronicled my whole leave of absence, and my career took off, you know? Everything took off after that. And it was really just a matter of trying to catch up and, you know, staying on top of the ball. You got to use the media, whether it says good stuff or bad stuff about you, to the advantage that you can make it. You know, it's luck. And, I've been in business for 9 years. There's some good stuff that's been written. There's some bad stuff that's been written. You got to use all of it. And that's just unfortunate. Well, that's just the way it rolls. So... Oh, I'm sorry. Right after. Huh? Yep. Thanks. Uh-huh. Food Network Experience was, I was a host of Sugar Rush on Food Network, and what happened was they had begun production. And whoever was the original host didn't work out for whatever reason. So they called and asked if I wanted to audition. I said, absolutely. I went to audition and got the part. And then we had to begin filming pretty much right away. We did 2 seasons of filming, so 26 episodes total. And, it was a really good experience. It was challenging in some respects. Like, I'm a tall guy, right? And a lot of times the camera guy was a little shorter than me. So there was a lot of times where the dude would be like, oh, can you do that again? And can you do that again? So, this spontaneous kind of filming, you just need to be able to roll with it and all that kind of stuff. So to me, some of the takes that they got weren't always the strongest. Regardless, it was a good show and people liked it and they, watched it and all that kind of stuff. But things change, and that was the Food Network Experience. Thanks. Sure.
Yeah, Warren, obviously you have a very strong passion for what you're doing, and with the expansion that you've gone through in the last year, putting in 4 new shops and so forth, mm-hmm. how do you go about finding people to work for you mm-hmm. that you can kind of wire them into that same kind of passion in order to carry the business forward?
Right. Thank you. It's a good question. I really benefit from having a lot of exposure based off that first article in the Washington Post and subsequent ones, as being known as this guy who's the career changer. And a lot of people that want to get into baking are leaving advertising and accounting and lots of different fields. We have a lot of people that are been in hospitality, but a lot of people have changed careers to come and work for Cake Love. When they do arrive, I think they're welcomed by a lot of organization within the bakery. They're like, everything's labeled, and we have a way of doing everything. And a lot of times people fight that by trying to, inject their own ideas really fast. And I'm open to ideas, but once you know how we run things at Cake Club, because we do it for a reason, you know. But we always do change things, and it's about improving the business. So a lot of folks that have come to work at Cake Love, they just present themselves, really. I mean, we definitely put out job requests and job notices, but a lot of it is just kind of like the scrutinizing and interviewing people when they come in and trying to make sure they understand how hard and how difficult it's going to be and how much freedom we try to establish for every person in the bakery. I mean, we lay out what you got to do, but there's a couple different ways to frost a cupcake, and I'm not going to stand over someone and be like, you got to do it left to right. You know what I mean? And it sounds kind of silly, but that kind of, lack of micromanaging exists at the bakery, and I think it works to our benefit. I think so. I mean, what it does do is it gives me staff that are cooperative. And the one thing I'll tell you that always helps a lot is whenever I need to show up at the bakery to do whatever, if there's something that needs to get done, it's me that's on the floor on my knees, getting down and doing it. And it's not that I leap at the opportunity to do that, because who wants to get on their knees and do whatever, but it always shows the staff that I'm willing to do that work, and how fast you should do the work, too. Which I like to work kind of quickly. Just right in the middle.
Can you touch a bit on the effect of tweaking the slower inner recipe?
Mm.
What is the effect of tweaking the number of eggs and the temperature of the eggs?
Temperature of the eggs before they go into the batter?
A lot of chefs have to do room temperature. Mm.
Oh. I think that the temperature of the eggs mostly will change if you're doing a foam cake, if you're going to do like a sponge cake. You'll change the texture of the whole batter because it'll kind of come up faster. If you ever want to bring eggs to room temperature, just leave them whole, put them in a bowl, run some warm water over them for like 20 seconds or so, and you'll be good there. They're much looser when they're at room temperature, so they should be able to fluff up a lot faster. We don't really do that, though, at the bakery. We'll just use eggs straight out of the fridge. I don't believe that you have a huge difference in terms of the batter consistency if it's not all at room temperature. I even like it to be a little cooler, like the ingredients to be a little cooler, because I don't want my batter to be super loose when I'm panning it. The number of the eggs, that will definitely kind of make a difference, and I would just watch out, because you're introducing a lot of water into it when you're using egg whites, and then a lot of fat when you're using egg yolks. I think that a lot of cake recipes could stand to use one or two extra yolks than they already indicate, but it really depends on the amount of other things in there. We can talk afterwards if you want about specific recipes. Sure, right next.
Warren, I think we have time for one more question. It's already about 10 minutes to 12. So.
One last question, but I'll be hanging out around here afterwards if you guys want to come down and ask me something else. It was both. My first location in Washington is on U Street, which is known as the U Street Corridor, formerly known as Black Broadway. Lots of history. The riots in 68 were in and around the U Street area, very transitional neighborhoods of the 80s and 90s, lots of stuff going on. But what it came down to is that was a neighborhood I knew very well, because I had lived in and around that neighborhood for almost 10 years. I knew the space, and I could actually work with it because it had a lot of infrastructure already in it, so it wouldn't be too expensive for me. And I knew that it would be something that would work, because it's a neighborhood where people live. They don't work there, but they hang out there on the weekends, and that's really what I wanted, was that weekend foot traffic. They said it was going to be something where it would change and the value would go up and all that kind of stuff. So I was just like, hey, that would be great if that happens too, but everything else was already known, and I kind of figured I could make it work in that situation. Listen, you guys, I've had a really good time. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'll be hanging out.
Warren, thank you for that very inspiring message. Just a reminder, if you would like to enter the drawing, please leave a card at the table in the back of the room. And thank you for participating in the keynote series. Thank you.